Chapter 16. Mr. Van Wyck demurred with unexpected acrimony. Progressed in what? He wanted to know. Why, in knowledge of truth, in decency, in justice, in order, in honesty too, since men armed each other mostly from ignorance. It was, Captain Wally concluded quaintly, more pleasant to live in. Mr. Van Wyck whimsically would not admit that Mr. Massey, for instance, was more pleasant naturally than the Ballinanai pirates. The river had not gained much by the change. They were in their way every bit as honest. Massey was less ferocious than Agi Damon, no doubt, but... And what about you, my good sir? Captain Wally laughed a deep, soft laugh. Oh, you are an improvement, surely. He continued in a vein of pleasantry. A good cigar was better than a knock on the head, the sort of welcome he would have found on this river 40 or 50 years ago. Then leaning forward slightly, he became earnestly serious. It seems as if, outside their own sea gypsy tribes, these rovers had hated all mankind with an incomprehensible, bloodthirsty hatred. Meantime their depredations had been stopped, and what was the consequence? The new generation was orderly, peaceable, settled in prosperous villages. He could speak from personal knowledge. And even the few survivors of that time, old men now had changed so much, that it would have been unkind to remember against them, that they had ever slit a throat in their lives. He had one especially in his mind's eye. A dignified venerable headman of a certain large coast village about 60 miles southwest of Tampasic. It did one's heart good to see him, to hear that man speak. He might have been a ferocious savage once. What men wanted was to be checked by superior intelligence, by superior knowledge, by superior force to yes, by force held in trust from God, and sanctified by its use in accordance with his declared will. Captain Wally believed a disposition for good existed in every man, even if the world were not a very happy place as a whole. In the wisdom of men he had, not so much confidence. The disposition had to be helped up pretty sharply sometimes, he admitted. They might be silly, wrong-headed, unhappy, but naturally evil, no. There was at bottom a complete harmlessness at least. Is there? Mr. Van Wyck snapped acrimoniously. Captain Wally laughed at the interjection, in the good humor of large, tolerating certitude. He could look back at half a century, he pointed out. The smoke oozed placidly through the white hairs hiding his kindly lips. At all events, he resumed after a pause, I am glad that they've had no time to do you much harm as yet. This allusion to his comparative youthfulness did not offend Mr. Van Wyck, who got up and wriggled his shoulders with an enigmatic half-smile. They walked out together amicably into the starry night towards the riverside. Their footsteps resounded unequally on the dark path. At the shore end of the gangway, the lantern, hung low to the handrail, threw a vivid light on the white legs and the big black feet of Mr. Massey waiting about anxiously. From the waist upwards he remained shadowy, with a row of buttons gleaming up to the vague outline of his chin. You may thank Captain Wally for this, Mr. Van Wyck said curtly to him before turning away. The lamps on the veranda flung three long squares of light between the uprights far over the grass. A bat flitted before his face like a circling flake of velvety blackness. Along the jasmine hedge the night air seemed heavy with the fall of perfumed dew. Flower beds beordered the path. The clipped bushes uprose in dark rounded clumps here and there before the house. The dense foliage of creepers filtered the sheen of the lamplight within in a soft glow all along the front, and everything near and far stood still in a great immobility, in a great sweetness. Mr. Van Wyck, a few years before he had had occasion to imagine himself treated more badly than anybody alive had ever been by a woman, felt for Captain Wally's optimistic views the disdain of a man who had once been credulous himself. His disgust with the world, the woman for a time had filled it for him completely, had taken the form of activity in retirement, because, though capable of great depth of feeling, he was energetic and essentially practical. But there was an that uncommon old sailor, drifting on the outskirts of his busy solitude, something that fascinated his skepticism. His very simplicity, amusing enough, was like a delicate refinement of an upright character. The striking dignity of manner could be nothing else, in a man reduced to such a humble position, but the expression of something essentially noble in the character. With all his trust in mankind, he was no fool. The serenity of his temper at the end of so many years, since it could not obviously have been appeased by success, wore an air of profound wisdom. Mr. Van Wyck was amused at it sometimes. Even the very physical traits of the old captain of the Cephala, his powerful frame, his reposeful mien, his intelligent, handsome face, the big limbs, the benign courtesy, the touch of rugged severity in the shaggy eyebrows, made up a seductive personality. Mr. Van Wyck disliked littleness of every kind, but there was nothing small about that man, and in the exemplary regularity of many trips an intimacy had grown up between them, a warm feeling at bottom under a kindly stateliness of forms agreeable to his fastidiousness. They kept their respective opinions on all worldly matters. His other convictions Captain Wally never intruded. The difference of their ages was like another bond between them. Once, when twitted with the uncharitableness of his youth, Mr. Van Wyck, running his eye over the vast proportions of his interlocutor, retorted in friendly banter, "Oh, you'll come to my way of thinking yet. You'll have plenty of time. Don't call yourself old. You look good for a round 100. But he could not help his stinging incisiveness, and though moderating it by an almost affectionate smile, he added, "And by then you will probably consent to die from sheer disgust." Captain Wally, smiling too, shook his head. "God forbid." He thought that perhaps on the whole he deserved something better than to die in such sentiments. The time of course would have to come, and he trusted to his Maker to provide a manner of going out of which he need not be ashamed. For the rest he hoped he would live to 100 if need be. Other men had been known. It would be no miracle. He expected no miracles. The pronounced argumentative tone caused Mr. Van Wyck to raise his head and look at him steadily. Captain Wally was gazing fixedly with a rapt expression, as though he had seen his creator's favorable decree written in mysterious characters on the wall. He kept perfectly motionless for a few seconds, then got his vast bulk onto his feet so impetuously that Mr. Van Wyck was startled. He struck first a heavy blow on his inflated chest, and, throwing out horizontally a big arm that remained steady, extended in the air like the limb of a tree on a windless day, not a pain or an ache there. "Can you see this shake in the least?" His voice was low, in an awing, confident contrast with the headlong emphasis of his movements. He sat down abruptly. "This isn't to boast of it, you know. I am nothing," he said in his effortless strong voice, that seemed to come out as naturally as a river flows. He picked up the stump of the cigar he had laid aside, and added peacefully, with a slight nod, "As it happens, my life is necessary. It isn't my own, it isn't, God knows." He did not say much for the rest of the evening, but several times Mr. Van Wyck detected a faint smile of assurance flitting under the heavy mustache. Later on, Captain Wally would now and then consent to dine, tea the house. He could even be induced to drink a glass of wine. "I think I am afraid of it, my good sir," he explained. Here was a very good reason why I should give it up. On another occasion, leaning back at ease, he remarked, "You have treated me most humanely, my dear Mr. Van Wyck, from the very first." "You'll admit there was some merit," Mr. Van Wyck hinted slyly. "An associate of that excellent Massey. Well, my dear Captain, I won't say a word against him." "It would be no use your saying anything against him," Captain Wally affirmed a little moodily. "As I've told you before, my life, my work, is necessary, not for myself alone. I can't choose." He paused, turned the glass before him right round. "Have an only child, a daughter. The ample downward sweep of his arm over the table seemed to suggest a small girl at a vast distance. Hope to see her once more before I die. Meantime, it's enough to know that she has me sound and solid, thank God. You can't understand how one feels. Bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh, the very image of my poor wife. Well, she... Dot, again he paused, then pronounced stoically the words, she has a hard struggle. And his head fell on his breast, his eyebrows remained knitted, as by an effort of meditation. But generally his mind seemed steeped in the serenity of boundless trust in a higher power. Mr. Van Wyck wondered sometimes how much of it was due to the splendid vitality of the man, to the bodily vigor which seems to impart something of its force to the soul. But he had learned to like him very much. See, this was the reason why Mr. Stern's confidential communication, delivered hurriedly on the shore alongside the dark, silent ship, had disturbed his equanimity. It was the most incomprehensible and unexpected thing that could happen, and the perturbation of his spirit was so great that, forgetting all about his letters, he ran rapidly up the bridge ladder. The portable table was being put together for dinner to the left of the wheel by two pigtailed boys, who as usual snarled at each other over the job, while another, a doleful, burly, very yellow Chinaman, resembling Mr. Massey, waited apathetically with the cloth over his arm and a pile of thick dinner plates against his chest. A common cabin lamp with its globe missing, brought up from below, had been hooked to the wooden framework of the awning. The side screens had been lowered all around. Captain Wally, filling the depths of the wicker chair, seemed to sit benumbed in a canvas tent crudely lighted and used for the storing of nautical objects. A shabby steering wheel, a battered brass binnacle on a stout mahogany stand, two dingy life buoys, an old cork fender lying in a corner, dilapidated deck lockers with loops of thin rope instead of door handles. He shook off the appearance of numbness to return Mr. Van Wyck's unusually brisk greeting, but relapsed directly afterwards. To accept a pressing invitation to dinner tea at the house cost him another very visible physical effort. Mr. Van Wyck, perplexed, folded his arms, and leaning back against the rail, with his little, black, shiny feet well out, examined him covertly. "I've noticed of late that you are not quite yourself, old friend." He put an affectionate gentleness into the last two words. The real intimacy of their intercourse had never been so vividly expressed before. Tut, tut, tut. The wicker chair creaked heavily. "Irritable," commented Mr. Van Wyck to himself, and aloud, "I'll expect to see you in half an hour then," he said negligently, moving off. In half an hour, Captain Wally's rigid silvery head repeated behind him, as if out of a trance. Amidships, below, two voices, close against the engine room, could be heard answering each other, one angry and slow, the other alert. "I tell you, the beast has locked himself in to get drunk. Can't help it now, Mr. Massey. After all, a man has a right to shut himself up in his cabin in his own time. Not to get drunk. I heard him swear that the worry with the boilers was enough to drive any man to drink," Stern said maliciously. Massey hissed out something about bursting the door inches. Mr. Van Wyck, to avoid them, crossed in the dark to the other side of the deserted deck. The planking of the little wharf rattled faintly under his hasty feet. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.